It's a Friday. Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. We're always here Monday to Friday, 4:30 to 6, with one exciting topic after another. Five exciting topics in 5 days. Guaranteed. Right, and congratulations to those that got paid yesterday. Speaking of which, the whole today's discussion basically speaks into that. Into this whole exchange of labor for, call it for a fee. I'm so glad Dwight is not here. Relax, he's just he'll be flying in anytime soon. Now, I start with the weather. Clear sky, windy, blah, blah, blah. I'm not weather expert. So, today's discussion is one that a lot of people can relate, or more like that basically makes for a good conversation starter. And that is more often the comparison in terms of service delivery between the public and private sector. Today's discussion is really not based on that comparison of how good is the public sector in terms of service delivery as opposed to their private counterpart or the mixed ones. It's basically a part of that comparison part, because it's the first thing that pops into your head. But the main discussion today is more of a question of as a country. For those of you that did not see our poster, it's structured in form of a question, really. As a country, is it time for us to have we started looking into, and if you are going to, and just stay tuned for the duration of the show, then you're going to, some of these questions are going to be answered, events that have recently taken place coming from the public sector, trying to answer the question of how is the public service, how is the service delivery in the public sector, people skills. I think it all boils down to that. Mostly people skills. It all boils down to people skills. And also, the perception on public service, the whole concept of public service, it turns out it's not well understood by a lot of Namibians. And before you start saying, I didn't go to school, I don't blame me. You don't have to look for an excuse, because an event that was recently held by NIPAM, Mr. Sankwasa Mubita, I think, Muvita. Pardon the mispronunciation there. Mr. Sankwasa Mubita, now I'm just abusing that word. Starts by introducing himself as controversial and controversial. But anyway, it's either I got the pun or understood it somewhat differently, but I just started cracking anyway when he introduced himself, using the word controversial somewhere there, because the first thing that came in my head was, he's definitely talking about Sankwasalization. But anyway, this is a different Sankwasa, not the urban and rural development minister. This is the NIPAM strategy and organization performance manager. So, for those of you that have been, go to private school, or like use everything private and you don't use a public sector much, which I don't think there's a long list of those people, because whether you like it or not, in one way or another, you're going to find yourself in a public office, requiring the service of that particular public office. So the question here is it time we start talking about capacity development, when it comes to first looking, begin by looking at how is our service delivery? Like, how efficient is it? And if it's not efficient enough, how can we improve it? And that's where capacity development now comes in, where you start, or more like organization by organization, you start looking at, how can we deliver this, how can we deliver services to the best of our ability, to the best, you know, as efficient as possible, basically, because what they're looking for here is efficiency. Now, the main discussion today is about capacity development, capacity development and service delivery in the public sector. Capacity development and service delivery. Basically, if you can put it in form of a question, it would be like, how can we enhance capacity development in a way that it you have this cascading effect that leads to the enhancement of service delivery in the public sector? I don't have the answer to, but anyway, which is why we're here to discuss. And which is why we also, now the main source of, reference that we're going to be using today is one of NIPAM breakfast event on skills development. This is the capacity development reference I made earlier. So, before we get to the main course, let's start with let's start with the more often, the frequently made comparison between public and private sector. There's a mixed there because there are institutions that are partly private, partly public. But in terms of the comparison is more often made in terms of efficiency, service delivery efficiency is more often made mostly between the public and the private sector. And you have a lot of people that actually argue that this is both your Helmut and academics alike argue in terms of the private sector being more efficient in service delivery compared to the public sector. Now, here's the thing though. There's a whole debate going on out there. Just like every topic that is open to call it for secular reasoning. Everyone is going to have a different perspective on it, like from the angle that they look at it from.
We can use Salman check.
All right.
Yeah, guys. So yeah,
public sector. Capacity development. That's why I'm looking at it from. But I decided to start from the angle of before we get to how can we enhance. How can capacity development be enhanced in a way that it it cascades into the efficient service delivery in the public sector?
Mm.
Yeah. So I started off from the angle of when it comes to service delivery, especially the public sector is more often considered, and this is a universal, perception in terms of service delivery, that the public sector is inferior, but the private sector is top notch.
There are nightmares, Ahmed.
I know. I mean, you and I know. Well, you have had your own nightmare. We have had a colleague's nightmare, wrong tooth. And
not those nightmares.
Which one?
About the top-notch aspect in terms of
private.
Just how they, the public and private.
Mm-hmm.
How the perception is there that in private,
it's inferior, is superior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Certain industries, yes. For example, like financial recording.
Yeah.
And financial reporting. Obviously, the public sector is top notch in, reporting to tax authorities.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the local authorities, who, for some reason, they are doing their best not to understand their role in terms of revenue collection. That's another discussion unto itself, because obviously we saw the Sangwasanization kick off at the start of, was it April or May, specifically there in the Zambezi region. But it's not to say that Sangwasanization is a be-all and end-all discussion to try and reform or try and make the public sector sort of like more streamlined or adhere to its own standards and settings.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually just a discussion of, do you have the right person there? Well, and this is where some things actually obviously also come in very lovely. Just for the listeners to know, we've got a lovely little audio spoken by I think it's the chairperson of the Public Service Commission, the PSC, PSC, Mr. Salman Jacobs, who recently spoke at a NIPAM event. they've heard this audio before, but this audio plays in this particular context that we have, obviously, because Mr. Jacobs himself makes a very good point in terms of you've got to empower certain divisions within your organization that then needs to cascade. You know, think about trickle-down economics, trickle-down economics, but think of this as trickle-down capacity development. So you need to explain to the people who are in charge of training and
trickle-down capacity development. That's a good one.
Yeah. You need to talk to the people, for example, these are supervisors, these are division heads, these are directorates, these are directors, these are managers, all those level of, you know, structures that exist in organizations, whether they be public or private. And then it needs to be motivated why this particular upskilling or skills development or capacity development situation would have to take place. Mm-hmm. For example, there were all these organizations that were giving us, the media, workshops. Remember, Hamun? I went to one last week, but technically it wasn't me being part of the workshop. It was more for these particular representatives from Southern Africa who have to come and share knowledge.
Yeah.
But I asked a few questions in there. For example, the workshop was about establishing a final reporting mechanism that will then be communicated to line ministries and large organizations in the public sector. Based on the needs coming out of MSMEs in terms of how they participate in the automotive value chain and development discussion. Now, I know that conversation for us is still planned on our planner.
It's still pending.
Yeah, before we hit the holiday season and holiday programming here on Eagle FM. So we still have to, you know,
talk about that,
explore that particular subject. The downside that comes through from such a particular engagement, I went and asked a question in terms of to one of the presenters at this scenario, because there were public officials there and private sector officials together in the same thing, sharing their experiences, insights, and how they believe one particular development should work based upon the country-to-country situation.
Mm.
And I asked the question there in terms of the consultants that were hired by UNECA to present certain particular statistical sets, meaning certain presentations. They did three presentations, and these presentations each flowed from each other. The one particular question I asked was the discussion on how do you factor in various particular behavioral tendencies, meaning which is the big conversation even taking place here in Namibia. Remember the conversations that took place during the course of this year, and even the president, you know, continuously emphasizing this particular point that we need to participate more in our extractive industries as Namibians as a whole, because we are too few to be poor, right?
Mm.
We've got so much natural resources, but there's too few of us Namibians for us to literally have this level of inequality.
Just process it and see how things change.
So I asked this question, Hamud. I asked the question to the presenter, one of the presenters, one of the consultants who presented. I asked them, have you guys ever looked at, from the mining complex, where does that ore, that copper, that iron ore, that manganese, where does that thing go? Now, we all know, you and I, and any person out there automatically knows that the answer there is, it goes to a European, North American, Asian market.
Yeah.
But then you ask yourself the next question, what does it go do there?
Processed into finished products, obviously.
But there's something before the processing even, Helmut.
What's that?
So, I asked the person, the presenter, I asked him, his name is Johan, he's a South African, him and his colleague, Lianri. I asked Johan, have you guys ever looked in terms of, because the discussion obviously is about how MSMEs can participate in this discussion, which is from governmental to public and how everybody helps each other achieve the common goal, meaning the policy being established for it then to happen on a practical sense on the ground. And I asked him, Johan, have you guys ever thought about metals exchanges? Because we can talk all we want about how the mine has to do something in order for the local processing to happen in Namibia.
Yeah.
But we are not asking the question to the miners of, can you find the price for your exercise of extracting out of the ground here locally?
Yeah.
Now, what does a metals exchange do, Helmut? A metals exchange is literally like a stock exchange, but it's the opposite. A stock exchange is you trading stocks of a company, meaning the shares of a company. A metals exchange is literally a buying and selling market, meaning I'm the mining company.
Strictly metals.
I'm the mining company. No, not just that. You also have an exchange for fresh produce, for example, like vegetables and fruits in the United States.
So it's not just metals, as in the name implies, it's the metals exchange.
Exactly. Okay, but here's the scenario that happens. A mining company would be on this exchange, and it would tell the market, we are planning to extract X amount of ore for this financial period. And when the first 3 month period of reporting, which is the first third quarter reporting, comes about and people see, meaning the market sees, you've actually extracted more than what you said you wanted to extract. Yeah. And it comes through at a specific price. Then people buy more or they pay more. And, you know, there's a price fluctuation situation happening there and things just go haywire. And the processing guys, the smelters, I heard now about fabricators and all those other guys, the guys that make the part, that make the machines for the machines that need to make the parts and the stuff. Then all those guys buy that chunk of what you just now brought onto the market. But where does that market take place? In London, in Asia, and in North America. So I asked that particular question to Johan and I asked him, Johan, have you ever considered these metals exchanges? Because you will never hear about these things and you will never understand as to, we all vaguely understand why the boat is sailing from Walvis to the Netherlands or to Madrid or to, no, not Madrid, or to Valencia or to Sevilla. But we don't understand what happens there. We don't understand. Just for example, when people don't understand why you have an after the event price shock coming about 3 months later. Let's say the Ukraine war kicked off here, ne?
Yeah.
And then 3 months later, you only see then the price,
everything going through
The roof. But what happened for those 3 months? For those 3 months, there was a contract, there was a fixed rate contract negotiated
between suppliers.
The conversation we had yesterday about the, I know I underquoted you.
Mm-hmm.
For 3 months, that had been there. For 3 months, there's predictability. Now, when we come to such a conversation, Helmut, now in the capacity development discussion, that's most why I told you. It's a perception game when people in the public sector think that the private sector is very efficient. Yeah, because in the private sector, the discussion is always about if you don't perform, well, make space.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Look, that's actually point that you just made, that it's more of a perception than a reality, and because it's also not black and white.
Yeah,
it's it depends from sector to sector, like you pointed out again, because we can go back to yesterday's discussion. The guys that were, you know, the institutions that the institution that was given the job to build the prefabricated accommodation facilities, and then turned around and say, "Hey, I underquoted you," and then basically will abandon boat. That's not no
abandon.
I know. Now those guys, public or private?
They were private.
Exactly.
And that's why I said it's a perception game.
Yeah.
Because the public sector believes that the private guys, they know what they're up to. They're professionals. They're experts. We should leave it to them just to find out. Homeboy doesn't know how to do basic accounting in terms of what are your inputs versus what's the actual price you've got to give, meaning what you need to put on those expenses for you to make your money back.
Bro cannot do a quote to save his life.
Zero.
Save his business.
Zero.
So at the end of the day, he just had to abandon everything and then will skedaddle out of there.
Yeah.
Now, so.
Meaning he was operating at a loss, Ahmed.
Yeah, so that's why he,
he was operating at a loss, and he knew it, meaning he underquoted
because of his own accounting inefficiency.
Look, there's a lovely thing I sometimes say in Afrikaans, but I will only use it here for English, which will actually just, you know, ensure that I'm safe. If you can't think further than your nose, meaning if you know that your capacity is just as far as your nose goes on your face.
Yeah.
Now, my nose is pretty flat, and I know how far that can go. Don't overextend yourself. The overextension also means undercutting. Undercutting and underquoting means don't come and undervalue yourself. Rather play a fair game. Have you ever seen people fight over an unfair ref in football?
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah. Imagine that setting. the team that is benefiting from the ref's dubious calls will always say, "Hey, we don't know. We don't know this guy.
What do you mean unfair? I don't see any problem.
And Anagam, no one knows that the ref and the coach of the benefiting team are both brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So, in such a scenario, you know, plausible deniability can just work so far. Until plausible deniability literally catches up to you for not be, okay, you don't have to be honest, but for not being transparent. Because the next step will happen. The new council will come in after the selections, ne?
Yeah.
The new council will then look at that report that we just dissected yesterday.
Yeah.
Then they will take that report and they will go ask Namara, Home Affairs, give us access to these documents. Let's really see what happened. And let's really go and analyze what was the tendered for, quote, per unit of all the inputs that said particular contractor was going to use. And let's see what was the timeline they were supposed to finish it by. And let us see how their progress went. But I'm just.
And when they say, we underquoted you, now, what does that mean? They'll obviously have to look into that.
Underquoting will have to be partnered up with the motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at the upskilling discussion, and this is sometimes where I also believe, the public sector guys, not to blow your horn a lot, but they know their work.
Yeah.
They know their work. They've been trained. They get training regularly. I've seen so many times in the private sector where training is not given to new people.
I think this is something I pointed out before, but I've had someone from the public office, from a public institution complaining about, the public sector guy, snatching their new trainees every time that they train them.
Yeah. Why?
So well, there's regular training going on in the public sector, but because in terms of compensation, the private sector has a lot of incentives that are very enticing.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of guys that are now after being trained by the public sector, and then shortly after that, you have a bunch of private sector guys coming with, dangling a carrot in front of them. Then they just, jump on board.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
It's not illegal. There's nothing wrong with it.
Unless you hear of some of the stories I've heard of.
For example?
I cannot divulge them, Mahmoud.
Cannot confirm nor deny.
No. Not that part. Primarily, I cannot divulge this particular discussion. But it's literally where it is expected of the public sector to have these particularly trained people to interact with a specific aspect of the private sector. This is a highly technical aspect.
Mm-hmm.
This dimension requires that you should also be an engineer if you're working in the public sector. Now, what has been the biggest complaints always about engineers in the public sector? The pay is not enough.
Yeah.
I don't know why you're complaining if the money will never run out. Huh? I don't know why you're complaining. What's wrong with riding a bicycle to work?
Rain. Winter.
Jane.
What?
Don't take
it. I have a whole list here.
Obviously, the guy can hike with his sister or his brother.
Windhoek. Mountains.
Uphills and downhills. You know, sometimes you've got gang squads.
Drivers who may or may not be...
Gang-sized hunting dog squads, you know, sometimes roaming about wherever you live.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The government itself, and you and I, we shared this particular dimension 2 weeks back, that you can see the need is there.
Yeah.
The government needs more employees. There is a need. And this is some of the things that my eyes have been awakened or opened up by the international guys that I watch on a daily basis, Richard Keane and Steve. No, Richard, what's the guy's name? Richard,
No, don't worry. You'll have
Richard
enough,
Davis? No.
You'll have enough time to remember the guy's name.
We'll take an ad break.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Windhoek Original, or Windhoek Lemon. Let's cheers to connecting. To moments shared and good vibes, anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. Heineken's iconic balanced taste. That gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials.
Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Welcome back. Let's give, you remember the name now, right?
Yeah,
I remember. All right, just finish that point and then we play the audio, then I'll proceed on the other side of the audio.
So, the guy that I watch is, the two economists that I watch is Richard Murphy and Steve Keen. They are both colleagues of each other. They've written books together as economists, and Murphy has more an accounting perspective to him. But in fact, in economics, a little bit later, as a professor, you know, to round out his particular skill set.
Yeah.
And both of them have said, Hamlet, there's no bigger lie currently in existence than the lie of a government having to, it is bad for government to have debt. There's no bigger lie out there than a lie saying it's bad for government to owe money. Why? The government has continuous services that it needs to provide. Why? Because there are citizens and residents in the country that need to be served. Why? Because they are the exact people that the government needs to represent, whom they actually also support. Now, when you sit with that motivation I just gave you, the biggest drawback that you continuously will hear about is a discussion of, for example, there's no money, we can't hire more people in the public sector. But we all know someone working in the public sector, Helmut. How often do you get the circular, Helmut? I know you get it at least once a month. Every month, they circulate jobs available in the public sector. And that's just the ministries. We're not even talking about the local authorities and the regional councils as yet. Just the ministries. So budgeting is being done, guys, for every financial year. The budgeting is being set aside. And the commitments are made when the right candidate is appointed. But put a massive question mark on the word right. Anyone give me a candidate to applying to a specific job? Being the right fit for the job is another major talking point. But after that, we've got to listen to Mr. Salman Jacobs, guys, from the Public Service Commission, who spoke at this particular breakfast by hosted by NIPAM at the start of the month, or at the end of October, actually, where he cited that when you're talking about training, capacity development programs, and trying to upskill the public service sector, most important people are the HR directorates, the HR organizations, the HR managers, and the likes. But, I mean, it's not rocket science. Why did they need a breakfast for the executive
directors? And also, don't assume that, you know, someone who is just ascended into an office knows what they are doing.
Oh, yes.
No, don't.
Please, guys, please. But before that, let's have a good listen to this particular contribution.
I also wanted to express my appreciation for being invited to this very important function, event.
Well, it was breakfast. I did mention that it was breakfast.
I'm sorry, guys.
look, I was listening to those, I was listening to all that via audio.
The clink and the clanging.
Yeah, it was like a Japanese tea party. Okay.
Yeah.
How far is the Japanese embassy from here?
Around the corner from us, literally.
Yeah. You're surrounded by embassies, I don't know. That audio is not gonna cut it. Because of all the background noise mostly coming out of the whole, you know, a tinkling part, like, you know, it was like a kindergarten kids playing teacup. But, you know, during this discussion, like I just pointed out before, we just gave that audio on a trailer and before realizing it's my God, it's a disaster in terms of background noise. Was a in terms of capacity development or retraining and upskilling, and all these things are basically intended to, you know, for the result of improving service delivery in the public sector. Mm. It all comes down to being intentional about everything that's being done, and the main, if not the one of the power sources in carrying out this improvement is the HRs.
Yes, they are.
There. So now, when someone comes into public office, take for example, in the political realm, for the most part, they barely show up for some of the trainings that are conducted by institutions like NIPAM, because I think ego takes over, and then you start just going things like, okay, you know what, I don't want someone telling me what to do.
Mm.
Yeah, and then one thing that I you know, I found as a shock listening to the audio is something. Is you know, is a point that was made by Mr. Sankwasa, not the urban and rural development. I clarified that earlier. Yeah, not James Sankwasa. Sankwasa Muvita.
Mm.
That's NIPAM. So the point he made was the whole concept of.
No, his name is Mubita.
Mubita.
Oh,
Sankwasa.
Movie. No, I thought you said another name. Because remember, he said the very famous tagline of my names are
controversial.
Both controversial and controversial. I was saying like, huh? How controversial can you get? And then I saw in the program, aha, that's why.
Sankwasa?
No, and the Mubita part.
Okay, now, see, this is one thing that actually curtails my pronunciation of that word, because I pronounce it as Mubita.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. The interesting point he made was that, the whole definition, more like understanding of what a public service is, must be explained to a lot of people, because, a lot of people, that's where the whole, you know, that's where they started, you know, going into the direction of maybe this is one of those things that speaks to the high statistics of corruption in the public sector.
Mm.
That's not to say that there is no mismanagement or corruption in the private sector. Oh, dear. That's what I thought until Dwight, you know, busted my bubble. Here's the thing.
Yeah, the busting is an unfortunate event. I'm sorry, man.
I know.
Well, I'm apologizing a lot today, even for the flu I'm sitting here with.
Yeah. So, a lot of us, okay, now let's start with one. One, a lot of people, who don't want to attend training sessions that, that are hosted to help them basically be good at doing the job that that their office requires them to do. And all that speaks to efficient service delivery at the end of the day. That's one.
Mm.
From the beginning, a lot of us look at the public sector as I'm just going to go there, then get a job, and then make money, and then, you know, maybe just say, well, get rich at some point in the process. But I think that actually makes a lot of sense, because I was told, go to school, get a job somewhere in the public sector, and don't worry, 1, 2, 3 years down the line, you're going to be a millionaire. And then I get a job and then go get in public office, and 1, 2, 5 years down the line, I'm still a 100-tillionaire. Then I begin to realize, okay, you know what? This is not working out. I need to maneuver some means and ways to make more money.
How much? You could have just said we are $10 rich men.
$10 rich men?
Yeah. We can literally count it in tens.
I don't see how $10 and rich are. Yeah. So, understanding the reason behind why, why the public service exists.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has to be explained into a lot of people, including those ones that are, take for example, coming from school, graduates and all those, including the people that are already, most people that are already occupying these positions, especially those ones that are coming, you know, that are occupying these positions, coming from more political dominated angles than the academic ones. They're coming there telling everyone, well, do you know who I am? You are calling me for training. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. I know.
First of all, I can't believe this is taking place. But look, it's, you, they're not paying for this training, are they?
Well, their officers would be, because the reason.
Yeah, but not for their out-of-pocket payment.
Yeah. The thing that I discovered there was that, NIPAM obviously provides like an internal service to the various offices, ministries, and agencies of the government.
Basically, the public sector.
Yeah. But these various OMAs must pay for getting training. Even if you might get an invite, you still have to pay, you know, an internal transaction between the two agencies. The one nice thing that the MD of NIPAM mentioned was that it is sometimes a difficult task for the regional authorities and the local authorities to respond to invites to training by saying, hey, listen, guys, the last time we had training for you guys was 7-8 years back for your staff. Anyone new that you appointed, you have to send them to us for training. And remember, these are the packages that you've got to pay for.
Yeah.
The MD mentioned, so I don't want to get his name wrong, his surname specifically. I might confuse him for someone else. He mentioned the local authority was literally on the way to Windhoek. They were between Okahandja and Windhoek.
Yeah.
But they were driving from a further local authority away. And they were like, hey, we're on our way. And it was like, on our way, you're on your way where? No, we're on our way to the training. Yeah, but you guys didn't pay yet. Why?
Oh.
I know, it's one isolated incident. Obviously, that was shared there in this particular, sort of like a joking manner.
Yeah.
But when you look at this particular subject matter, this also means that communication is key. Meaning, there is no excuse in 2025 to say, hey, listen, you sitting all the way in Tsumkwe, there's internet access for you. Respond to an email. Say, hi, we're here. These are our reports. Who must we report to? Who must we do what? And do what? And look where and do what? These particular conversations, Hamid, are critical because I always find it funny when the ministry head officers have, hey, this is our customer service chart. And I sit there going like, so did you guys not know that you were serving us? I obviously can't ask that question to the minister, to the minister, because the minister will go like, why are you being like this, Dwight?
Wait, was that the ED that said that he found himself somewhere in the one of the offices in the north, and he was he went to a counter and
the lady behind the counter yep.
was you know busy playing what I can at least I kept Candy picturing Crush. In my head as Candy Crush. Thank you. Yeah. Again.
And he's asking to come in, and she's saying, no, we are closed.
Yeah, I want to see the manager, I think. No, we're closed. Candy Crush here. I'm on level 100.
And she's even at a ministerial extension office, ne? It's not even a local authority office. It's a ministerial extension office.
I would pay a lot of money to get, to get a video of her reaction once the ED pointed out that, actually, I'm a new.
I'm your big boss from Vinny.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Eish.
I'm
still traumatized to this day. That poor girl.
You know, the silence was deafening itself.
But the point that was made after that now is one that I think, I also heard from, someone, Dave Chappelle make. That, I don't have to tell you who I am for you to give me the best service. You must assist me because, well, it's what, it's in your job description to offer this service.
Yeah.
I don't have to, to tell you that, well, I am from this office, I have this say name, or I'm from this position for you to sort of like, pull your socks up and you do your job to the best of your ability.
It shouldn't be rocket science, Elmon. It should not be. And sometimes I know there's a whole bunch of local authorities that have their own little community web pages, community Facebook pages, where they are sharing the most colorful stories ever.
Oh, dear.
The most colorful stories ever. Now, the reason is, Hamid, not about the sharing of stories. The upskilling and upscaling discussion is primarily because everyone needs to go through a refresher training course, workshop situation, just to jog the memory, get them at a relaxed level, and then just ask them, hey, just do it again.
Mm-hmm. Just go do what you did yesterday, but think of it differently or have an enhanced thinking approach. And
oh, this and this changed.
Exactly. Literally that scenario. I would understand, for example, there are certain things that the private sector beats the public sector hands down in is enterprise solutions, meaning using technology to achieve greater production levels. Hands down. Hands down.
Public sector.
There are still some people out there tendering to ministries, to the PRO departments of ministries. Yeah, I can be your graphic designer. And like, a lot of people have moved on from graphic designing. Now they're just using Canva.
Graphic designer. Yeah, forget that. We have a software now. Don't worry.
Yeah. There's even AI that can graphic design a thing for you out of thin air.
Yeah, this is the prompt-based large language models.
Exactly.
All you just have to do is spell your...
And then you see the graphic designer is driving an M5 right next to you because all he did was design a whole bunch of A5 adverts for the ministry and then, yeah, I'm a millionaire.
And
but there was no procurement.
And ACC is like...
There was no procurement. There was no ad saying we need these particular servers. Zero. Zero.
Yeah.
I know a whole bunch of people
mm-hmm.
who got work that way. I'm not mentioning names.
Maybe they wrote a proposal.
But you still need to procure.
Yeah.
Writing up a proposal anyone can do, but you still need to procure.
Yeah.
So the procurement cannot come after the fact of the matter of your proposal.
ACC, that was right.
just saying.
Yeah.
Not saying much.
There are a bunch of points that were made, you know, that were made here. Now, the next one, that I'm going to bring up is for the, you know, sort of like, they are important in a way that they help, one, you know, they help one catch up with what's happening in the real world.
Yeah.
Not in a, I'm not doing a real world versus a fantasy world comparison, but look at it this way. If you're a freshman out of the class, or more like out of out of tertiary, that transition, you obviously need some, you know, you need some assistance to transition from the class to the office.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. That transition also, that transition is, can be hectic. And I think this training comes in handy. And that also speaks to, how these two places, aka the class and the workplace, the level of accountability that they have. And you're talking about, compartmentalized power structure. This is one thing I like about, global institutions. Basically more like the way that humans build institutions.
Yeah.
We build it with a compartmentalized power structure. Not everyone is making it's not one person that's making all the decisions all at once. You have this structure that's made out of different people and everyone is playing, their individual role. But the main goal is the same. Efficient service delivery.
Mm.
And if someone is coming from the, a freshman, this is someone who is fresh from the class. And then you put them in an office and then you cross your fingers and hope they get things right. Well, that's going to require one heck of a transition.
Yeah. For example, like the example that was given by Mr. Mubita.
Yeah.
Who said, now you promote someone into a managerial position or role or supervisory role and they go like, okay, I'm now Mr. Big Clerk, you know, Chief Clerk of Clerks, you know, I'll decide to come to work every second day plus weekends. And then who's going to supervise this guy? Ah, don't worry. You know what? I'm Chief Clerk of Clerk Divisions.
Oh yeah, that supervision is one that, is one also that was made that, introduced people to supervision type of work. Because that's where the people's skills now also comes in because how you communicate is very, 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 very important. I know a bunch of people that basically work with, I know a bunch of people that, I have my own workplace and, not everyone I associate with outside the studio, actually work for a media house, let alone Eagle FM. So we do talk about different things pertaining to our different workplaces. And then you basically hear, having more like a feud with, so, you know, with their coworker at work, then you see that, this is a miscommunication problem. You guys would have solved this if you just sat and, talk about this. And, more often, especially with women, you guys are going to murder me on this one. It's more often coming from, I don't like how you said something. So, professional communication, whether you like it or not, there is such a thing as professional communication. You don't have to like it, but it's a thing. Now, that's actually one of those things that I find, somewhat very interesting and low-key annoying in the corporate world. If you look at the corporate world and then you look at how they tell people that you are fired, that English, we apologize to inform you that our contractual agreement ends here. And then they have a lot of Harvard English. They are doing that on purpose. It's called professional communication. Now, And I think to some degree, it's an English thing. Guys, the word must is not a request. The word must does not, should not be used in a sentence that, how do I put this? The word must doesn't have any request in it. It's a command. So for someone that went to private school and they understand what the word must means on a technical level, when you use you must do this, so may you please and you must are two different statements. So more often fights have started because someone said you must. Now even if maybe they went to Umukuru Development Community High School, and they don't understand the difference between may you please and you must.
Who community development, Almond?
Umukuru Development Community High School. That's where the school that Basket Mouth went, the Nigerian comedian.
Basket Mouth.
Mm-hmm. It's something that he made up. I think it's something that he made up from what's his. There are two things involved.
Yeah.
I still have to introduce it to the
to
the
Basket Mouth.
Yeah. It's a funny name. Now, Here's the thing. People skills, communication. It's very easy to use a word in a way that comes off as rude, but you didn't mean it. Mm. I remember when I was in high school, it's something my agriculture teacher actually gave me a pinch. I was in her office. And, she was looking for something in my book. I kept pointing at it, but she was like, okay, where is it? I was like, ma'am, it's here. And then, and with my very limited English vocabulary, I said, but ma'am, it's right here. And then went on to say, can't you see? Ouch. Oh yeah, that's when she gave me a pinch. It's like you can't say "can't you see" to your teacher. Which now that I understand the statement, "can't you see," you can't say that to someone in authority because it's very rude. You are implying in a way that they are somehow blind. So
I still want to know who told them no.
Never can't you see to your supervisor?
I know you can't do that to your parents.
There's a reason why I didn't go there.
I know there's a reason no one does that to their parents.
Yeah, no, don't do that.
No matter the advanced age. Because then you will literally see Red Bull gives us wings.
Yep.
with the kiri just extending itself and just...
You know. Just say, can't you, the next thing you know, you're greeting St. Peter at the gate.
Who are you youing?
Ah, yeah.
First thing you'll be asked is, who are you youing?
Can't you see? H. Well, she was nice. She just gave me a tiny pinch. You can't say that to your teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, let me just say, after that time, I totally now understand right now that there are certain ways that you can, word structure ways of communication that you can use, especially when it comes to the English language, that can easily come off as rude, even if your intentions are good. You didn't mean to be rude. But the way that the statement is coming out, like yours truly and telling his agriculture teacher, can't you see? Imagine telling your ED, can't you see? Ouch.
Okay. I don't know if they do that.
I'm hoping they don't. I'm really hoping they don't.
I really hope they don't.
Yeah. So, when it comes to service delivery, I think this then becomes very important because, First of all, our official language, one of, I think, Afrikaans is also an official language. Yeah.
No.
It's not. It's just English.
It's considered one. Yeah, it's just English.
So our official language is not native to us. So sometimes the person you are assisting can say things like what Helmut said to his agriculture teacher. And then you can misconstrue that to say, so you are commanding me to help you. There are those that are, that are complete idiots that will just say it with a straight face, knowing that they being intentionally rude. But there's someone who can say that without actually meaning to be rude, and then you start denying them the service that they are there, that's required of you to dispense to them. But because these are the people that go home saying, but what did I do wrong? And then they will start calling on Eagle FM and start, roasting your office. Like, yeah, well, I didn't do anything.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, until you basically, until you tune in on Eagle FM, and thank you for tuning in, and start saying, no, I did not help her because she came off as rude. Now, there are two ways this can happen. There are people that are just intentionally rude. And there are those that are, they didn't really mean to. Just that, well, English came in and violated everything.
You know, I got a very good explanation from a psychologist.
You're gone.
Helmut. Sometimes you just let people be, ne? If they want to be rude, let them be rude. If they look rude, let them be looking rude.
And sometimes we can wake up on the wrong side of the bed and then you start taking off the tension on the people behind the counter. Or the other way around.
Yeah, but if the people behind the counter were the ones that started everything because you woke up behind on the wrong side of the bread. Aye, not bread, bed.
Wrong side of the bread, I was going to go with that one.
I was hoping there would be bread. But yeah.
Yeah, so the service delivery discussion. The big question for me comes to the part of the problem that the public sector seems to be having, which is... you're just training people that the public sector keeps, the private sector keeps dangling a carrot in front of, and then they disappear. So at this point, how do you solve a problem like that?
Hmm.
Yeah, because you can't chain them to your office because they have the right to basically take their expertise where they see greener pasture. Ouch. I think that's one heck of a dilemma for the public sector.
Yeah, yes and no, Helmut. Yes and no. Look, if there is some sort of a windfall discussion where the public sector just, decides to collect 200 billion worth of revenue, let's say in the next 2 years, things just look wonderful. Obviously, yes, a whole bunch of people would be employed in public sector. The positions that have been frozen, the thousands of teaching jobs we need to fill, even though we've got the imbalances, the potential clinics and other infrastructure being built, then yes, you would see things really, really moving about.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's not to say that our public private sector is also that big enough that they can absorb that many people primarily who come from the public sector who wish to change things.
Mm-hmm. Vacant.
Who's that? Who's that?
Vacant.
Okay, Helmut, you went on the wrong website. No, please, please don't go on that website. That's the wrong website to use as a platform. Yeah?
Okay, you were saying?
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Primarily because there is still a moratorium in there somewhere. We know about the school libraries, which have a moratorium as well. We know about the teaching positions, who got slapped with a moratorium the other day, supposedly. And then there's also other positions across the other ministries that still need to be filled. Now, it's all good and well to see ACC trying to do its particular sort of like cleanup work that it's been doing for the past 3 weeks. But it just looks weird because it looks a little bit retributional, meaning we are exacting some sort of revenge on those people who are perceived to have, what's that word's name? Who are perceived to have been, benefited, who have benefited from the particular public position that they held. There's another sentence for it. I almost said self-gratification, but it's not that as it's more like you are abusing your office for self-gratification.
Personal gains.
Yeah. It's all good and well, but in some cases, some of the things are like 3-4 years old. And you're like, so you waited 3-4 years to go and lock up a former mayor, a former town councillor, councillor. He's a political appointee. He was voted in. You go and try and arrest these people to make what point?
So you're thinking there must be a statute of limitation somewhere?
Not really. It's just if the crime happened, if the thing happened, if the negative activity happened, why was it not acted on upon then?
They were not looking then.
Probably. They were not asking the question then? Probably. They might have heard, never looked at it? Probably. I mean, how does the ACC arrest the same people that it cleared back in last year? Remember the NAMCOR guys? How do you arrest the same people you cleared from your own investigation?
You are arrested for... that usually mostly happens because new evidence have come up or different charges.
Exactly. However, the discussion is slightly also warped because you've got to ask the question of also, now, because in that statement that was used by the ACC, the police, the Namibian police did their own investigation. The Namibian police? Did someone go and lay a charge? Did someone go and make a complaint for them to follow up on? And probably someone might be saying, no, we don't, you don't, the Namibian police doesn't need any such particular sort of like, contact mechanisms. They can potentially act when they see something, needs to be investigated, they go and investigate it. Well, it's the first time I've ever seen something like this, and it just looks a bit weird in terms of behavior and precedence. But it's all good and well, because they still reach the same particular conclusion in terms of that, where we find ourselves now with that legal discussion happening there. But when you look at other things that are now popped up, suddenly now people are being arrested, local councillors before a local council election. What is going on? Helmut, it just looks too weird. It really just looks too weird.
No, the thing is, that's actually something that would be interesting, actually, after arresting someone, you have to charge them, and then you have they still have the right to a fair trial.
Oh, yes.
So, that's...
And one of the weirdest things is that
yeah.
These people's identities are already sort of like blurted out there.
Yeah.
So the person still has to appear before the court, but the photos are being taken of the people.
No, look, this
can work. Blasted all over. telling the media companies, go and plaster these photos everywhere.
Look, this can work in one of two ways. It's either they are, I will assume they know what they're doing. By that I mean all the arresting and investigating officers, basically the security cluster.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they know what they're doing, because if they're just, that has a lot of, legal ramifications, because if you take, for example, blast someone's image left, right, and center, and then you find out that they're innocent, then they can turn around and sue you for a whole lot of money, more than you're alleging they stole. I'm telling you, the defamation of character. I'd go to the bank dancing. That's why I'm saying I'm gonna go ahead and assume they. ACC, the police, or anyone that's invested, everyone involved in this arrest, they know what they're doing, because if they, any screw up in things like that, is going to cost the government a lot of money in conversations, especially when, if they decide, which is more often the case, the individuals being arrested left, right, and center. If they are guilty, that's for the, that's for the courts to basically decide. So it will all boil down to the, to the evidence provided, provided by the ACC or the police. And that, when that is presented and they are found, innocent, they are taken out. If they are found guilty, then they are sentenced. But, the thing is, in situations like that, you can't afford to screw up. You should really be sure before going out to basically do that. Because if you screw up, and then you find out that, oh no, actually we just arrested you for mistaken identity, and then
name is already plastered everywhere.
The thing is that screw up is going to cost the government a lot of money in defamation of character lawsuit that will be flying left, right, and center.
Yep.
So, looking at the ACC, officials, like, Mr. Inaba, for example, looking from his response, or more like, what I can easily call a presentation during oil rot. That's when I basically saw that, Mr. Number, one thing I know about the gentleman is that he worked as Standard Bank Forensics Division he worked for ACC, Standard Bank Forensics Division, and then went back to ACC. So, I'm assuming when it comes to the financial world, he understands a thing or two about how the financial world works. But, I'm pretty sure they are mindful of the fact that, they must have all the evidence available, or more like, they must have a high degree of certainty before arresting someone, because if it turns out they are accused and their reputations has been tarnished, someone is getting sued big time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it finds us back, Hamid, at the principle where I cited that, and I agree also with what Mr. Jacobs had explained in the audio that the listeners could not listen. Yeah. Apologies for that, guys.
Oh, you would be listening to cups.
Yeah. Knives, forks, and cups. Mm-hmm. But it has to start from a particular sort of like a training culture that speaks towards do train regularly. Now, the weird thing is, Hamid, Dwight could also go to various workshops, being invited to these particular workshops, and then I sit here with an advantage over, let's say, the rest of the colleagues here at Eagle FM. Mm-hmm. Because the colleagues are now not invited to said particular workshops. They're not invited to the same workshops that I go to.
Yeah.
Now, this obviously means that the upskilling capacity development program is slightly skewed, because now I see myself always, continuously just adding to my skill sets.
Yeah.
On one side, it sometimes also makes you unaffordable, because you take
blessing in a kiss.
Because it comes with a little bit of a curse situation.
Very good at this, but
Yeah.
Can't afford you. Bye.
And in some cases, you even have to chop things from your CV so as to say, this is where I end.
Yeah.
So it's a two-page CV basically still.
Then they find out you're good at something like, oh.
Yeah, you're good at literally building the house. But your skill set, I'm only good at plastering, you know, putting the cement on. But you're good at building the...
Plastering.
There was one time I, like, experimented 5 times, you know, and all 5 experiments were
successful. DIY videos on YouTube.
You know, we're pretty successful, you know. I'm the guy on YouTube that you will see with how to do it yourself.
Yeah.
Another thing that's also going to become a lot more common has to be computer skills.
Yeah.
Computer skills development, Helmut. We still have a lot of Namibians specifically in many places of like the public sector as well. Have you ever heard of some, okay, let me give you an example. Have you ever have heard of someone, you walk up to the person, you ask the person, hey, listen, you guys still have not fixed this thing on my account. What happened? And the person gives you the vaguest of vague answers by going, ah, it's the system's fault. Have you ever received such an answer?
I don't think so. So our system is down.
Down is something else.
Yeah.
Which also shows to very alarming situations potentially.
The system is down. I ran into that. I ran into that 2 days ago, but it was a private institution.
But they at least motivated to you why it was down, why you have to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah.
They probably said, you know what, because we've got technicians who are looking at the thing, we don't actually know what's going on, so just relax.
Just bear with us, yeah.
So when you get to certain particular like public sector scenarios, and they give you a weird response of, no, it's the system's fault. But the system does not input information itself. Who inputs information? The human. The human is there to input the information, use the system to generate results. Or your example that you gave. No, it's down. And then they just stop there. No, the system is down. And you ask them, why is the system down? No, we don't know. How could you not know? You're a service provider. You're supposed to know this answer.
I'm not an IT expert.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Alan. Remember your example of the don't you see it?
Can't you see?
Can't you see it? Now, they give you the same cheek, the same cheekiness by saying, no, we don't know. And you ask them, why don't you know? And it's like the head goes like, did you really just ask that question? Because here's the thing there. I'll give you a contrasting example of what people who've worked in the private sector and customer service before. You get taught that customer is taking time from their life and from their work to call you, to drive all the way to your office, to come and see you for the problem or the issue they are experiencing. They're not showing up there for fun. They're not there to come and visit and, you know, share laughs with you. They come there with an issue. One of my siblings were told when she worked in South Africa at a multinational in South Africa, one of the senior management, which was a foreigner, a Japanese guy, told the call center people, when that customer calls and dials our number, they are taking time from their life. They decided, but ad break before we move on, guys.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Welcome back. That caller.
So, that caller.
Time.
takes their time to pick up the phone and call you, the customer service desk. That's the reason why I made the example, Ahmed, of why do the ministries have a regular exercise of knowing your customer service charter? For who? To sensitize to who? To make who aware that they've got to do their jobs? How does this work, specifically in the public sector? Now, obviously, there are that term that I love using, front desk or point of contact employees that deal with the public. And then you've got the guys behind the scenes who actually have to do most of the other work, specifically in processing and thus also providing the solutions. Another thing is also primarily some of the technicians. Remember yesterday I told you that in IT, the guys that are trained wherever they study their IT training, you may not say no. They are trained literally at, there was one stage, a former friend of mine before he passed away, he explained it to me. He said they were trained to say, you will have to do everything in your power as an IT guy, Helmut, not to say no. It cannot be done.
Have you tried turning it on and off?
Have you tried right clicking? Have you tried plugging it in and out? Have you tried doing this? Did you switch on this? Did you switch off that? What are the other devices doing? Okay, I'll come and see it myself. And then they find out the person is trying to send a 1 gig file, trying to email it to themselves, and it literally has blocked up the email server. Yes, those wonders have happened before. Because the person does not know there's a 50 megabyte file limit on the email server. This means you can only send a file size the size of 50 megabits through an email. Otherwise, you'll have to use file transfer services, which people also don't know much about.
Mm-hmm.
It's only us journalists who are very tech savvy. Us in the media. We're very tech savvy. Super tech savvy, Helmut. Editing, sharing files, getting files, resizing files, changing contrast, clarity, this and this and that. We're very technical, highly technical. If you've ever met technical people in this country, it's journalists. Okay, not the ones older than me.
Think outside the box.
Thinking outside the box, being resourceful, getting the end result, but they also have a weird viewpoint of getting the end result as long as it has been achieved. No matter the level, the quality, or the size. An end result is an end result. They will even debate with you about the means definitely justifies the ends. And you'll go like, what? What? So when you think about customer service or skill capacity development discussions, in many cases, the discussion is about who is being served. So the public sector knows they serve everyone.
Yeah.
It becomes specialized when you get to the private sector, because the private sector goes by sector to sector to sector, or industry to industry to industry. Yeah. But let's just say, for example, Helmut, what was that town that you used a little bit earlier? The combined school example?
Umkuru Development Community High.
You take pride in mentioning that Mkuru side. Know, right? So, let's go to Mkuru now.
Yeah.
So the teachers have to realize, and the school staff, that they serve the community where that school is based in.
Yeah.
They serve the children of the school. They serve the parents of the school. So the community thing, you can segment it further. You can break it up into smaller pieces. You can say community, like a whole part, or you can break that whole part into smaller bits and identify how each segment is interacted with by the teachers and the administrative staff of the school. When it comes to the children or the learners, the teachers, obviously, they practice some total dictatorial, authoritarian regime situation to the kids. When it comes to the parents, the teachers obviously play an engagement, let's cooperate, slightly more democratic, hiding their particular true intentions of being completely dictatorial or authoritarian when the parents turn away. you get to the, what's the matrons of the hostels who will say, this is my place, this is my way or the highway situations. And then you either see them walking away with the chicken that was meant for the Sunday lunch for the kids in the hostel, and the kids are just there eating, you know, regular police beef with just basic onions and no rice.
Okay, this type of training also also incorporates leadership training, right?
It also incorporates the ability of knowing identifying structures. Helmut, let me tell you a weird thing that has happened that's come about in 2025 and 2024. In the private sector, they realized workers, teams in the private sector are happier when there is no management. I'll say it again. They are happier. They are more productive when there is no management structure. They just produce and produce and produce.
That's ironic.
They're not being micromanaged. They're not being coached, think like I think, instead of do like I'm doing. Because I got taught on a university level in that one marketing subject I had of, what was that subject's name? Customer service something. Do as I do. Don't do like I'm saying. Or, you know,
in other words, follow my actions,
follow my actions, not my words. So, in many cases,
just align your actions with your words, because why am I deciphering the?
No, but here's the thing, Amun. Yeah. It should be clear cut. It should be codified. It should be easily translated to someone. And there should be no ambiguity. There should be no vague spots. Now, I've seen in the media space.
Yeah.
I've seen editors. Okay, I'm not talking about our current editors. No, not them. I've seen editors fail dismally in that assessment. Dismally. Why do I say they failed? And how did I judge them by? Well, there's a precedence I judge them on. I come from a atmosphere or an environment where things are supposed to be structured. I'm here to produce. Where's the computer? I'm here to produce. Where's the internet? I'm here to produce. Where's my notebook and my pen? Where's my telephone? I'm here to produce. Where's my cell phone airtime and where's my vehicle allowance?
So I need equipment.
I need equipment to achieve the results.
Yeah.
You achieve the results, you give reporting. If you don't achieve the results, you get asked, what's going on? What is the issue, Dwight? Why are you not performing, Dwight? In the media space, I've seen egos clash, which is the thing that Mr. Mupita highlighted. I am now the, you know, chief supervisor of supervisors, chief clerk of clerks, you know. I'm the god clerk of clerks. I'm running my own little cult of clerks.
So when you're good at, when you come with a more like a motivating, what you'd call motivating work ethic, or more like a high intensity work ethic, then you are looked at as an enemy, like, oh, amen.
No, that's something else, Amon. What I'm talking about is when you have structure and when you don't have structure. When you have someone that was coached, who has seen what needs to be done to make workflow predictable versus someone who has never seen structure, who doesn't know what workflow looks like, who doesn't know how to follow workflow procedures. Look, I was accused in my previous career path of cutting corners, but still achieving the same result. So what was I accused of? I was accused, for example, of let's say the client would come through and they would say, hey, listen, Dwight, I've spent so much money with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just waiting on this final payment. Is there not some sort of a leeway you can give me, you know, like an allowance you can give me just so that I can place this one advert and then I pay you tomorrow after the thing has appeared?
Yeah.
Then I take that message just like that.
Yeah.
Go to the supervisor that I had. Go tell them the story. And I asked the supervisor, listen, you can even talk to the client directly. They just need time to finalize the payment.
Mm-hmm.
And then the payment will be there. In between, I request that the client obviously just signs off on the price and they date it. And then I sign below that to say, I acknowledge that this is the communication between
the agreement made. Yeah.
We go from there. We work from there. Then the finance guys come from below and they go like, yeah, Dwight, you're allowing people to, you're giving free ad space. I said, no, it's not free ad space. It's just a window of time for the person basically to come back with the money. And I obviously know it's my responsibility. Mm-hmm. So I will explain. And it is my responsibility to follow up on the money. Then the money comes through. Obviously the transaction, it makes accounting in that scenario weird. Because mm-hmm. now that billing is done every day. Mm-hmm. So what happens in retail, Elmer, is that you bill every day. Billing is you close the transaction books at the end of a day. So if it hits 5 o'clock, you run a process where it tabulates and makes sure that all receipts, all business tallies up to all monies received.
They're telling me grocery stores
does that every day. And that's why they close 5 minutes earlier. But sometimes they want you to finish up so that they can have the extra 20 minutes after that to do all that billing. But before we continue, let's quickly get this live through. Read through. Velvita University, where the 2026 applications are now open for the following new programs on offer. The Faculty of Health Sciences, Master of Public Health, Level 9, and the mode of delivery will be distance. Areas of specialization include maternal child health, public health, nutrition, mental health and well-being, food safety management systems, sustainable solid waste management, innovative approaches in pharmaceutical public health, drug regulations, child protection and adolescent health, violence prevention and intervention. Application fee is $230 Namibian. Application deadline is 30 November 2025. For more information, please call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Vavita University, where everyone is an achiever. So accounting, Helmut, is quintessential and essential. I know I'm using quintessential inappropriately in that sentence. Essential, a lifeline, a lifeblood in the private sector. However, accounting, for example, what I've seen in the public sector, it is sometimes treated as a after the fact, after the situation has happened. Oh, don't worry, the mayor approved something. Don't worry about that. Because we read it in those Auditor General's reports about the accounting. And in many cases, the accounting officer, which is the reporting officer about the financials of a ministry, is the executive director. Meaning, they've got to hand over through their office all documents to the Auditor General's office for a specific time frame, for a specific set amount of money that they received, obviously, from the central budgeting that takes place at the start of every financial year. Now, at the heart of this conversation, Helmut, when you look at accounting forms the bedrock of the ability to basically ensure that all monies received are accounted for, all monies used are accounted for, and that all documentation aligns with all these transactions that have taken place. Why do I say this? Because Richard Murphy, the British accounting professor and economics professor there from the University of Sheffield, continuously tells me every day in his videos, okay, not me personally, but he tells us, his audience, that the world works on a double entry system. If you take something, something gains something. If you take something from something, so, something gains.
If I spend, someone is having an income.
Yeah. If there was a $5 in your account and you're swiping that $5 at a local retail store, that $5 minuses on your side and positives on that side. Just think about it like that. Now, the double entry system is the very first basic accounting method you are shown in high school in Namibia. I don't know if they still teach it that way, but it's the one that looks like T's. They call it the T account. You remember that?
Yeah.
That's the one, double entry system. If there are two books you're dealing with, if you're taking money from one book and you're transferring it to another book, you need to enter this in this book and you need to enter that in that book. They call it the debit and the credit system.
Yeah.
Debiting and crediting. And in all cases in accounting, you have to assume that there are three parties participating. It's you owing people money, and it's people owing you money. Debtors who owe you, creditors, people you owe. Always.
Doesn't that make them two people?
No. You are always the middle person.
Oh.
You're either giving out or you're either receiving.
Mm. There are people you owe money. There are people that owes you money.
Yes. There are always three people. In many cases, the discussions are predominantly about just two parties, those who owe, and the other set of two parties, those that you owe. But in many cases, you have to think like a three-party system. Money coming in, money going out. Because you will spend money, Hamoud. You will not infinitely or into infinity. No. You will not infinitely and into infinity, the same thing, continuously just receive money.
For one, you can't cook it, so.
You can't eat the money.
Nope.
So you will have to
try to chew it, but.
You will have to spend the money.
Yeah.
Which is the situation that the tech bros don't understand.
Tech bros?
Yeah.
Silicon Valley tech bros?
Yes. Helmut, just look at the AI thing.
Yeah.
They're trying to take out human production.
Yeah.
To replace it.
Oh,
with
yeah.
Computerized production.
But look, I'm not shocked here. These are the people that, that shot themselves in the foot.
They always do.
Yeah.
They always do. Do you know what's the worst thing? Do you know that there was an internet bubble in the 90s?
Really? In the 90s?
People were talking.
Or when there was a rise of all kinds of browsers, more like search engines.
No. That was parallel to the internet bubble. The internet bubble was all these companies that were registering as .com businesses.
Oh.
I am now an abattoir. I'm now an abattoir who's selling directly digitally. They're trying to do selling meat like eBay is selling meat. He's selling products every day. And then people realize, but I want to go see what the meat looks like. Yeah. I'm not going to buy a picture over the internet.
Nope.
And at that stage, the consumers did not trust anything you show them digitally. They want to see the thing firsthand, sure.
And it's for a good reason.
For a good reason. So what was the human condition at that stage? Verification, verification, verification. What did it also show? Humans love going out of the house. So when you go out of the house, you're doing it for a purpose. You're driving all the way to the mall to go see the shop, to go do this, to go do that. You don't want to see a virtual representation of a shop, Helmut. What's a domgheid is that?
Another part is one of a security factor where I want to know what I'm buying, that it's the size that it's depicted on the page.
Exactly.
How often have you heard of people buying something on these online platforms?
No, I was one victim like that.
You have a very nice couch.
The thing I ordered was pretty manly. It was for a man, the thing that I saw in the picture.
Uh-huh.
The thing that showed up was not for a man.
Okay.
And it was three times smaller than me because it couldn't close around my belly.
Oh.
So, all I did, I said, that said she was my colleague who was this order with me, a lady.
Mm.
I said, thanks a lot.
But
I took that stuff and I gave it like that to my nieces.
One of our former colleague here, I think it was on AliExpress, bought a set of mirrors. They came in octagonal shape, they're just patched together. The way that it appears online, it's a very amazing set of mirrors. And then the
thing
mirrors
showing
came.
Up here.
Yeah. She couldn't even see one eye on one of those mirrors.
Because they were cracked and broken.
They're smaller than they were.
Their dimensions are smaller.
Yeah, the dimensions are smaller. More like on the parcel when it arrived.
Yeah.
But the dimensions indicated on the website that she was browsing indicated that they're actually larger in size. They were not. Human flaw of trying to deceive each other. Basically, that's where you have bubbles like the .com bubble, where people are like, look, I like the call it efficiency, but what word am I looking for? I like the convenience of me having to just do everything at the comfort of my living room. But the thing is, This is my heart and money we're talking about. I want to be 100% sure that what I'm buying is really what it is.
And it makes things difficult because you never saw it beforehand. All you had was to work from was from a picture.
And also it has to do with accountability. Yeah. Like, who do I return it to? Because if your store is somewhere in Japan, and I can scroll through your website from here, and I order something, I pay my money, and something that I don't like arrives. They say, if I buy something from any of the, is it grocery store or any of a retail store here in Windhoek, and I'm not satisfied with the product, I can take the receipt and then, I can take it back. But if it's something you bought online, what are the return policies?
Zero. I always look for return policies.
Yeah, always look for those.
I always read at the back end of the receipts as well, just so that I understand, in the event something happens, what should I do? What can I not do? Not me, just...
Look, on this whole capacity development and service delivery in the public sector, I'm still having one question here. You can't make it illegal for people to leave an institution to go and look for jobs elsewhere where they see greener pasture. And you have the public sector pouring a lot of money into training and retraining and upskilling people. And more often, these people find themselves, as soon as they have acquired these skills that they were trading into, private sector guys show up and then off they go and they're back to square one in terms of lacking the skills that brought up the training programs in the first place.
Mm.
Okay. That's like trying to fill a broken cup with water. Because the water is just running through.
Yeah, and there's no way to fix that broken cup.
Yeah.
Because that cup is punctured all the way to Kingdom Come.
But now... no, it's signing off time.
Yeah.
And it's Friday.
I don't know what that means, Armand. Leave other people's salaries alone.
Gaming for me.
They were paid yesterday.
They're still gaming.
Yeah, somehow Windows 10 and Windows and Microsoft just sidestepped me.
You were backstabbed.
Big time. Big time.
Ouch.
But yeah, we move on. They have books to read.
Yeah. So until Sunday.
Same year. Until Sunday as well, dear listeners. Enjoy the rest of your weekend in our company. Enjoy the rest of the programming to follow on after us today.
Yeah.
And we'll see each other again, same place, same time.
Yeah, it's a weekend. It's it's a November. So don't drink and drive. Drive safe. Watch the road, especially when it comes to heavy vehicles. Yeah, careful of how you overtake those ones. Just watch the road and be safe. You are not Vin Diesel, and that's a movie. Make I remind you, that's a movie. You're welcome. Plus, you got your license in Hobabis. Sorry, guys.
Leave Hobabis alone. Honey.
I know. Hobabis is always catching stress. But, no biggie, guys. Just enjoy your weekend and be safe.
Yep.